Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation with Tom Merritt and Leo Laporte. Episode 48, recorded April 11th, 2012. Thor Muller. Triangulation is brought to you by Stamps.com. Your time is valuable. Don't waste another minute waiting in line at the post office. Just use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it using your own computer and printer. To get our special offer, go to Stamps.com now, click on the radio microphone, and enter Triangulation. Fast Conference, the ultimate in professionalism, clarity, and flexibility for your conference calls, all at a low price. For two Fast Conference calls free with no commitment, go to FastConference.com and use the offer code Triangulation. It's time for Triangulation, the show that covers some of the most interesting, smartest people in the world. We get to interview them. You get to watch. That's a good combination. Tom Merritt is here.
Fun for us, fun for you.
Yes. He is one of the three legs of Triangulation, and our third leg today is Thor Muller, who is one of the founders of Get Satisfaction, which is a great site which we use. He's a five-time entrepreneur and the author of a new book, Get Lucky. You've heard of Get Satisfaction? Now you can get lucky with Thor's book, co-authored by Lane Becker, your co-founder.
That's right.
Thor, great to have you. Thanks for coming up.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it.
It's fun to crash the party.
Yeah. Well, you're the party today.
Woohoo. Where's the beer?
I'm amazed. I mean, you got out of high school in 1989, and you started your first startup shortly thereafter, right?
Well, I tried publishing, didn't like that. Although I'm back in publishing now, in a way. And I tried to get a job in the web, but nobody knew what the web was.
The early 90s.
You mean like AOL?
What are you talking?
So I had to start a company to give myself a job.
You know, a lot of people, a lot of entrepreneurs, that's about it. The only people who hire them are themselves.
Exactly. The unemployable. They now have a path in life.
So what was that first company?
That first company was one of the first web design companies called Profit Communications.
That's interesting. Yeah. And were you designing for local companies in your area and stores and stuff?
No, we actually pretty immediately, I mean, the local businesses,
they didn't
see the point yet.
Right.
This was, we had big clients right out of the gate. Broderbund, right down the road.
Really?
We did early Carmen Sandiego websites.
Oh, yeah.
And then we started working with entertainment companies.
Wow.
We did a Rolling Stones website and some pretty big movie websites.
Wow. So, now, there weren't content management systems at this time. These were all static pages, right?
HTML? Mostly static pages.
Yeah. There Except was, you're under construction graphic.
That was dynamic.
That was
you had an animated GIF. Yeah, we started to put together our own content management systems with Perl.
Wow.
No databases.
CGI. Yeah,
just lots and lots of flat files.
Wow.
In fact, I hacked together some message board software to be a content management system in Perl at one point in like 96.
Yeah. You hackers.
Well, I wasn't a hacker. I was just hacking.
Were you at Adaptive Path? That was Lane's company.
No, so Lane started Adaptive Path along with several others a few years later.
Right. Also a web design firm.
Also a web design firm. They actually... famous for coining a couple of terms, including user experience and block.
So you met
dubious honor that
later blog and said we should do something, or how did that work out?
We used to lease space. My old company, not Profit, but the next one a few later, leased space from Adaptive Path, and we got to know Lane and the other guys. It was completely unplanned. One of the many unplanned circumstances that led to where I'm sitting today.
Which explains the book. We can explain that. Serendipity.
Exactly.
There is no such thing as luck. And you started to get satisfaction with what idea? What was the plan?
So if I can go back a little earlier, we had started this whole other project, which was called Valley Swag. And Valley Swag was Swag of the Month Club.
Yeah,
right. For all the people who don't live in Silicon Valley, this is their way of getting a Dogster shirt or early Twitter shirt, something like this.
Cosmo.
Exactly. So for $20 a month, you could have a piece of the valley. And the joke, of course, was that this is all stuff people were giving away.
Right.
So we thought it would be funny, mostly just funny, to package it and send it out as kind of a recurring revenue or recurring model. Turned out that it was really, really hard But it exploded.
To get the stuff? Or
to get the stuff. Well, with 50 people, it was no problem. But once we had 2,000 subscribers, about 2 months later, it was really, really hard to get all that swag. None of the cool companies have that much swag lying around.
Right.
Like, do you guys have swag?
Yeah, but not 2,000 units.
No, not, right, right.
Yeah, I'll give you a pen if you want before you leave, but...
Yeah. So we started...
a lanyard.
A lanyard. I'll take a lanyard.
Yeah. Lanyards are cool.
You can hack a lanyard.
Yeah. Yeah, the lanyards are really cool.
So...
So you were hoisted by your own success.
We were, in a way, but the area that we were most hoisted was customer service. All these people, day and night... calling us, asking us for information where their package was, advice, giving us advice about how we should run the company, all of these things. Anyway, so we noticed that people were talking to each other, and we were talking to them in the comments section of the blog. And it struck us, this is the future of customer service. Out in the open, people helping each other, us helping them in public so that others could see the answers we provided. And we created Get Satisfaction.
It was born.
It was.
It's in a much needed solution for companies. You know, they always talk about how in the gold rush, the people who really made the money weren't the gold miners. They were the people who provided the services to the gold miners, the picks, Levi's, you know.
Yeah.
This is smart.
Right. Tell that to the Instagram guys.
Good point. Yeah.
There are exceptions.
Good, yes. Good point. That's a gold miner that hit a mother load right there. Yeah. So we use Get Satisfaction as a great way, and I love it because it says TWIT employees are here to help. It's a, you know, if you go to the getsatisfaction.com/TWIT, you'll see, and it's a really useful way for us to manage this, and it's difficult to manage. We don't have a customer service department.
Right, and we noticed that there's a whole range of companies that want to be close to their customers but don't have, you know, traditional customer service. And so this was a way of essentially making the edge of the organization kind of blurry. Like, you can see in, we can see out. And the interesting thing about that is that you're exposed to things you ordinarily would never see. And that could change the course of your business. So, in very positive ways.
Like what?
Well, for instance, people might point out that they're using your product in a way that you never expected.
Yes.
Okay, so we found that there were people using our product to help manage, you know, small government agencies using our product to communicate with their constituents, just as
That's a random example. That's so cool. Yeah.
And they would tell us how they were using it and what we could do to improve it. So by creating that transparency, you know, at the edge of the business, we were, our own perspective on what we were building changed. So it's pretty powerful.
I bet a lot of people hear this and say, well, that's what I hear Twitter does, right? Isn't everybody on Twitter doing mm-hmm. that the same way? Why do I need Get Satisfaction when I can wade out into the Twitterverse?
Right. When we started, of course, there was no Twitter as we know it today. It was very early, and Facebook as well. Now, today, I think the world of social business is really maturing, and we see that there's a place for the open conversation controlled more by the customers than by the company. But it's difficult, for instance, for a company to provide the best possible service all the time through a Twitter or a Facebook.
Right. So search, you got to go find it.
Yeah, exactly. Once it's out of sight, it's out of mind. It doesn't necessarily work within your own customer relationship management software, all that stuff. So we basically built Get Satisfaction to be more like the lobby of a hotel, where it's a managed experience. You can control the design of it. You could have your staff working with customers really closely, and it's just a more high quality experience. If you talk to a lot of big companies, they have their own communities.
Well, I see
and
Microsoft as a customer, so they obviously have a big customer service department. It's probably 10 times bigger than Twitter. The entire TWIT.
Right.
So what do they need Get Satisfaction for? Why does it benefit them?
I think what we've seen is the emergence of kind of a multifaceted customer service strategy. First of all, Get Satisfaction isn't just used for customer service. It's any area that you want to engage your customers.
Customer engagement. That's
customer
probably a
engagement,
better way to
put it, yeah. Where customer service is one application of that. Collaborating with them on defining the next version of the product is another one. There's marketing uses for it. Social commerce is another one that's emerged over the last few years.
People are selling stuff on Get Satisfaction?
They don't sell stuff, but if you think about the pre-sales process, if you're looking to consider, you know,
oh,
what
I have
stroller
a question about this stroller.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
The
yeah.
conversations people have about strollers, right. both before and after they bought
so
it.
So it's the really showroom important. Versus the hotel lobby.
Yeah, it's standing next to somebody who's also considering the product, mm-hmm. and you're comparing notes on it. And so there's lots of ways to integrate community into your entire business. But we're also seeing that just social is, and by social I mean having open conversations that are human and not necessarily driven by, you know, hard metrics, is becoming more and more of a need to have across the business.
It makes you look yeah. more responsive, frankly, if you're under satisfaction.
Like you care.
You care.
Yeah.
It's a great illusion.
Right.
Now, somebody Strengths in the chat room says you allow BugMeNot logins, which would mean people can go in anonymously. Is that on purpose, or is that just
I'm not
an
familiar with the BugMeNot logins. I can't comment on that. But what's interesting is that when we launched, we had anonymous login, and we decided, based on what we saw, that we wanted to encourage people to use their real identity, much like Facebook.
Too
does.
Easy to have drive-by.
Yeah, exactly. But what's interesting is that that's changed over time. Now we have a more nuanced perspective, because there are good reasons why people should be able to communicate out in the open anonymously.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
So what we do is we allow companies to validate that somebody's a customer, but they can post publicly as whoever they want. They can create a pseudonym.
Oh, that's interesting.
So the company knows who they are in that case.
In that particular case, the company would know who they are.
Yeah.
So I think the world of identity online is just changing a lot. We're you know, the more identifiable we are, the more I think we want to have an opt-out at certain times.
Right.
Whereas we maybe didn't think about it that much 5 years ago when we had Facebook logins everywhere. Today, I think we're learning to be more sophisticated about, you know, how our identities are used.
Do you think as generations grow up with this kind of identity management that they'll be less or more concerned with their privacy? Because I hear a lot of people postulate, oh, well, they're just going to get used to it.
Yeah, I think we're getting used to a lot more public interaction. There's no question about that. And so we're also getting more sensitive to those times when we absolutely don't want to be tracked. And so I think it's interesting. I know people, for instance, who've been out very public. My wife, for instance. So my wife has not only public herself, but she's really open with our kids, right? She posted videos of my son dancing in the park when he was 4.
Oh.
Okay, so she's out on
when
that end 16, of the
spec. He's 16, he's going to hate that.
But. It's actually a great video. But she loves PATH now because there's a certain set of conversations that she only wants her close friends to be a part of. And then she just got me on another app. I think it's called Pair.
Mm-hmm.
It's a social network for two.
Yeah. Isn't that fun?
Only she and I can see
just two people.
Just two of us.
Yeah.
Do you thumb kiss?
We occasionally thumb kiss. We draw each other pictures.
I don't
pictures.
Mean to pry, but I was...
Okay, yeah. I'm open enough. I'll share that much with you. So the point is that she, I think, is a pretty good canary in the coal mine.
She
is both more and more
it.
Open in some ways, but more and more nuanced in how she's managing it.
Right. In fact, that's where people's dissatisfaction with Facebook is coming from, is that there isn't that nuance anymore. And they keep trying to make lists and circles. You know, that's where Google Circles came from. It's just not nuanced.
So my friends at Facebook would say that actually all the controls for it to be nuanced
are
there.
Yeah.
They're just nobody understands
nobody
it.
Nobody uses it.
Yeah, and they
it's
know
complicated.
That.
Complicated. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I'm sure that's why the ascendance of PATH. And I think Pear is kind of inspired, because it really is just, you know, you couldn't be more straightforward. It's just
it's
you
cute.
And another person. And you know what is great about it? It's private. And you know it's private, and you know nobody else is going to see that.
Exactly. It feels exclusive. I mean, in the same way that Pear, if you're one of the 150 friends on somebody, you feel exclusive.
Right.
But if you're the one other person on Pear, you know you're special.
I haven't figured out how to have multiple Pear accounts yet. I'm working on that. If you have, like, Pear, several... I guess
it's hard to manage. You just have to create a new email.
All right, we're going to talk. You've talked a couple of things you said have involved serendipity and luck, and we're going to talk about that in just a second. Our guest is Thor Muller. His new book, which comes out next week, it's not even out yet. We have an early edition.
That's
it's
right.
called Get Lucky. It's going to be from Josie Bass, which is an imprint of Wiley, and he and his co-founder Lane Becker are the authors. Give Lane my regards. I think I played Werewolf. Maybe not. You say he doesn't like games.
He doesn't love games. He will, if there are cute girls involved,
there were cute girls
he will
involved.
Play Werewolf.
Yeah, there are always cute girls involved.
Yeah.
So let us talk a little bit about, you know, the other thing that's, besides cute girls, stamps. Postage. Big problem in life, and everybody's got it.
Is that a segue?
It was. Until you pointed it out, I had no idea. It was just the flow of conversation.
You know, the last thing you want to do is wait in line at the post office, unless there's a cute girl behind the counter. Then you might, or guy, depending on your preference, you might want to wait in line. But if you don't, can I make a recommendation? Stamps.com. It allows you to bring the post office to you. It means without it, you don't need a postage meter. I'm not talking a postage meter here. In fact, I got a tweet from somebody who said, thank you for telling me about Stamps.com, Leo. I saved $300 a year on my Pitney Bowes. I don't need it anymore. It lets you print postage with your computer and your printer. Every small business should be using this. Every eBay seller should be using this. You know, I think a lot of homes should use it. Stamps.com. If you do a lot of mailing, it will save you a huge amount of money, and the convenience alone is worth it. So here's the deal. Mac or PC, you go to Stamps.com. There's actually a no-risk trial you can do right now for 30 days. Go to Stamps.com. Do not, it'll say $80, no risk. Don't do that. I got a better deal for you. Click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner. And there it is up there. And enter the offer code triangulation. Okay, it's a lot of letters, but you will be glad because that $80 offer goes to $110. $55 free postage. $50 free. You get a digital scale, a USB scale, so you always have exactly the right postage. And that four-week trial, stamps.com. Click the microphone. Use the offer code triangulation. You get discounts you don't get at the post office, up to 21% off express mail, up to, I think it's 15% off priority mail. You don't have to ever go to the post office. You do everything at your desk, you know, label all the packages, label everything. This is kind of like, I mean, it's like Get Satisfaction. This is makes it easy for you to service your clients, your customers, to send out the invoices. And then the amazing thing, that really cute mailman comes to the door and takes it. So you don't even have to get up out of your seat. You'll actually come and say, and here's, where is it? Give it to me. You can, by the way, the post office lets you schedule free pickups as well. They're so happy if you use stamps.com. I want you to try it right now. I'll be happy to. Stamps.com. Click the microphone. The offer code triangulation. Do it for the $55 free postage. It's okay. It's okay. Do it for free postage and a free scale.
I am so on that.
It's such a good deal.
I have so many books to send out.
Exactly. Oh, perfect
this
for you.
This is going to be a lifesaver for me.
Perfect. And you can do media mail. It's all, you know, it's all handled.
Oh, perfect.
And, you know, you know, normally if...
book rate.
You get book rate. And normally you have to, if it's over 13 ounces, you have to bring it to the post office. Like I said, are you a terrorist? No, you don't have to do that anymore. That's great. It's awesome.
So you can carve out some.
This just made my day.
Thank you.
That's great.
See, it was worth coming here, wasn't
it?
In effect, we've paid you to
until
be here.
That moment, I was...
Yeah, it was, I know, I was kind of pissed. Prepare for the unpreparable. It's not a good slogan. It's hard to say. Prepare for the unpreparable. What do you mean by that?
It's very Taoist.
It's very Taoist, right?
You cannot prepare.
It means that the things which matter most to us are often the things which we can least expect, or at least predict, right? And I think if we all asked, you know, what got us to the spot we're in right now, we'd have to say, well, I never planned. I could never have planned for this.
Life is a random walk. It really is.
Random walk. And this is something that's not a new observation. I mean, when we were researching this book, I found massive amounts of brilliant writing on the subject by some of the great scientists, mathematicians, artists. And yet in business, we have a very uncomfortable relationship with the word luck.
You talk about in the beginning of the book, everybody, this is 2005, coming to see Sergey Brin talk about founding Google, and he's going to explain, you know, at John Battelle's conference, here, you know, the insights. How did you get this insight?
Here's how you can found Google.
And they're all hanging on his words. What was it, Sergey? He said, well, we were just really lucky.
Right. And by the way, that's what the guys at Instagram are saying as well.
Well, actually, in that case,
I believe that.
Well, we'd argue something that's a little more nuanced than that. Because when we say somebody's lucky, we kind of mean it as almost an insult. It's like they didn't deserve it.
No. Yeah, and exactly. You know what? Kevin and Mark did it exactly right. They did everything just right. Yeah. It's beautifully done. They were very thoughtful. They really planned it. And this is the point, is you can plan to be lucky.
You can, right. You can create the structures around you that allow you to intersect with chance, right? Those are the things which you didn't know to look for, okay? And in Silicon Valley, we're really good at that. We're more open than many other places.
I think you're right.
Okay? And I have a lot of issues with the Valley, but I will say that we're really good at that, right? Where we embrace new ideas. But most environments, organizations, companies, are really, they focus so much on predictability and planning that they're fearful of the those chance collisions. Okay, so we try to keep them out. Cubicles are a great example of this.
Right.
Second thing is, once you find that thing which was unexpected, what do you do with it? Do you actually recognize it as valuable? This is where developing a kind of mindset is so important. And then the third area is, okay, so you've had your aha moment. You've seen the light. Like in the case of the Instagram guys, they saw that photo sharing was a big deal, a bigger deal maybe than many other people thought.
It was a pivot for them.
But they had to make a big effort to change what they were doing, to throw out all that code and to go in this direction.
But I think you're right. This is how you make luck. This is how you make a $1 billion payday.
Yeah.
Your lucky payday is by being open to these opportunities and potentialities.
Yeah, so what we try to do in the book is whittle this down into the skills, the discrete skills that allow people to achieve these kinds of breakthroughs, whether they're individuals trying to start a company or in big companies, which are the ones that probably need the most help oftentimes. And we broke it into 8 skills, and each one has very practical advice for how to manifest it. We think that anybody can do it. It's not just the lucky that are born with this. It's anybody who wants to achieve this.
It is true that companies, especially big companies, do everything they can to eliminate surprise.
Right.
Right?
Well, I think companies feel uncomfortable with that because they want to show the boss that this is the plan. I have a
predictable
plan, and we followed the plan.
Right.
And here are my metrics to put on my review.
Yeah.
And even forget being corporations, as individuals, we work that way. We're like, this was my plan. And when this other thing starts to happen, you're like, no, that's not part of my plan. How do you get past that resistance and go, well, this wasn't part of my plan, but maybe I can adjust the plan.
As Mike Tyson once said, everyone has a plan until they're punched in the face.
That's very well put. I bet he knows.
Yeah.
He didn't say it quite like that. Everyone has a plan until they're face. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I can never pull that off.
I didn't.
I wouldn't even try.
You were right. You'd be smart. You'd be a wise man. So how do we, as a company, big or small, create that culture?
Right. All right, so again, there are these eight skills. The first is motion. How do we get out of our chairs? How do we create unfamiliar situations in familiar environments?
So you do it on purpose.
You do it on purpose, yeah. And in fact, some of the most interesting things we're seeing now are the rise of these co-working spaces and accelerators, which are being extremely conscious about how they're designing these spaces to achieve this kind of these creative collisions.
Yeah.
And a lot of architects are even putting this on their resumes. Like, we specialize in creating these creative environments.
There's a great story in the Isaacson book about Steve Jobs only wanting one bathroom in the original Apple. I don't know if it was the new Apple or the...
It was Pixar.
It was the new Pixar studio. That's right.
Because he wanted people to run into each other, so they all had to go across the whole building to use his bathroom. He was overruled because people said, I'm sorry, we're not going to do that. But he was looking to create serendipity.
Right.
Chance meetings.
Is it Larry Page that's doing this, where all the executives have to work in the same room for a certain amount of time
per week?
They don't have to meet. They just have to be in the same room so that, again, you're setting up these collisions.
Foster this stuff.
Exactly, right. So you end up running into the person who's working on something completely different, but who has an insight that changes the course of your project. Right. So motion is one area. Divergence, getting good at taking the paths that you weren't planning on taking. Okay, and this is where, you know, we have our plan and something comes up. What do you do with that? One of the most interesting things we found in the book is that taking unplanned paths is one skill. The other skill, which seems contradictory, is commitment. Mm-hmm. A commitment to an overriding cause.
Well, that's what I would worry about, that I would wander too much.
So
that
it's a balance, right.
And so that's why these things fit together. Yeah. If you don't actually have your head around where where you're committed.
Right.
And it's got to be at a level that's high enough that it allows you to say no to many things, but it doesn't change with the wind.
Right.
And I could give you some examples of that. But at the lower level, you have the ability to take turns, left turns, right turns, or branch in different directions if you are a company that can afford to experiment. Wow.
Something happened back there? Yeah. His ball collapsed.
And I think, I actually think that, again,
that's the motion. We make people sit on balls, so they encourage motion.
Where's my ball?
You want a ball next time?
Next time. Can we just replace all
we could, because these golf, we have plenty of balls, God knows.
But Instagram, I think, is actually a great example of this, where they started off with something of a purpose. They were fascinated by the mobile device as a new way of communicating. And they built this app. And they found a path. They found some opportunities that they hadn't thought about before. And they were able to take that new path, but at the same time, they remained committed to this really high-quality product experience. And once they defined the domain of that experience, which was photo sharing, they maintained a kind of aggressively
a laser-like focus on
that purpose. But they were also mining the data for seeing how people were using the tool, and they were discovering things in that usage that they couldn't have expected. So these things actually go together, commitment and divergence. But we have to acknowledge that they can be in conflict if we don't guide them carefully.
I mean, is it that there are many paths up the mountain, but you're still going up the mountain? Is there a goal that you don't want to keep changing, but you can change how you get there?
I give you another example. One of my favorite examples is a company called Interface, which makes these carpet tiles you've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And textiles is one of the dirtiest businesses in the world. I mean, they're polluting chemicals. Their waste is everywhere. That's shipping. But 20 years ago or so, the founder of the company, who passed away last year, Ray Anderson, decided that he wanted to do something different. He wanted to show the world that they could have zero, that they could create a textile industry that had zero net impact.
Wow.
Okay. And he declared it. So that was his purpose. He declared, by 2020, we're going to show that we could create the world's most profitable textile company and have net zero environmental impact. Okay. So how they got there, of course, he had no idea how he's going to do this.
He just put it a flag never been done. And said, we're going to do
what's your plan?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we refer to this as the burning the ships model of leadership, right?
Yeah. Columbus gets there and he burns the ships. We ain't going back, kids. We're going to make this work.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's Cortez. But
Cortez. Yeah. Same idea. Yeah, yeah.
So they were able to stumble on these ways of accomplishing this goal, which were amazing. Things that they never would have stumbled on had they not had that goal. So he told his design staff to go out into the wilderness and come up with design ideas.
Wow.
And they went out thinking they were going to come back with designs of leaves and water patterns and so forth. But what they realized when they went out into nature was that when you stood back, all the leaves and stones on the ground were random.
Mm.
But they seemed coherent.
Mm-hmm.
So they realized they could make textile patterns, these carpet tiles, that had flaws built in. They could use any old material they had around. They could go 100% recycled.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And take advantage of it.
And take advantage of it, simply because they went out there with new eyes based on this purpose they'd had. So purpose definitely drives serendipity.
You have to create a culture around it somehow, though, too. Yeah. I mean, how do you make that happen in your business?
Well, I think as usual with these things, it's got to be bottom up and top down at the same time.
Right.
We're all familiar with Tony Hsieh and how he turned Zappos into
the king of culture. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, he had to recognize, and his team had to recognize, that this was important. But they defined the culture based on the inclinations of the team they had. And I think that. These skills come naturally. When I watch my kids, when I watch any kid that hasn't been in school too long, I see kids that are curious, they follow their interests, and they support one another in that, or they beat each other up. But
right.
And so I think that these environments create, these organizations that we create, they're so focused on delivering value to shareholders, delivering incentives to employees or bonuses to employees based on predetermined goals, that we strip it away. So we need to find new ways to both plan. We can't give up planning.
Right.
But also leave space for the unexpected.
You know, I was joking when I said Taoism earlier, but it is very similar to the principle of Wu Wei, the effortless effort. You still have to exert effort to have effortless effort.
But don't effort.
It's a balance.
Don't try.
Don't force it.
Don't force it.
You gotta
ride the horse in the direction it's going.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really hard.
It is. It's really hard.
But I think it's one of the most effective ways of realizing your dreams in a way which is true to yourself,
right.
and leads to success. I mean, we talk about big successful companies. We talk about really well-known successful startups. But we also talk about companies and schools and nonprofits that have defined their own success. And so part of that is sustainability.
It's not always a billion-dollar payday.
Exactly.
Yeah.
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 But that's when you mention shareholders, that's the one sticking point. It's like the value of shareholders is the gospel for the free market. And they want a plan. And they want you to stick to the plan. And they'll remove you if you don't stick to the plan. If you're a CEO, how do you manage that? And it's been done, certainly.
Sure.
But that seems like the tallest order. Because it makes every company focus on short-term results that they can show in their quarterly earnings report.
Okay, so I think this is one of the great challenges, is how do we create measurement for different kinds of outcomes? So some outcomes are knowable ahead of time. Okay, for instance, if you have a pretty well-determined product, a pretty well-defined product, you can, and good marketing, you can just stack salespeople up and they should be able to go out and sell it. Okay, I'm not saying that.
I wish that were true, but okay, go ahead.
Well, at a certain point of maturity, this is the idea anyway.
Bagels. Bagels.
Easy to sell bagels.
But when it comes to innovation, you can think harder.
Right.
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 And so you need to be open. You need to find ways that allow for us to measure the ingredients for innovation without necessarily stifling it with unfair, productivity goals in the short term. Mm-hmm. And so companies like Interface, like I was just describing, I mean, they absolutely have sales goals. They're a publicly traded company with lots of shareholders.
Right.
But they also have this 20-year plan, which they're committed to above all else. That's their mission for existing. So they can stomach some short-term losses or slow downs in growth as long as they're not too great. And as long as they're to the service of this longer-term goal. And I think we see that kind of that pattern.
Because they've gotten buy-off on that 20-year plan.
Yeah. Yeah. And they've told the market what to expect, too. And this is one thing I've seen in boardrooms. If you're a CEO that is afraid of the board and afraid of disapproval of the board, of not meeting some kind of externally defined metrics, then you're going to fall into this trap of shorter and shorter-term thinking. Mm-hmm. But if you're the kind of CEO
Lead.
That can go in there, then say, this is what we're doing, and this is why it's important, and it will pay off, or not. I mean, it's a risk. Startups are a risky business.
Right.
Then I think that you can define a new structure which allows for this kind of space.
And I think you have to mean it. I think a lot of CEOs try to fake it. Like, I'm going to act in charge.
We're willing to fail.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really true.
We talked with Jeff Clavier, was it last week or the week before on this show, and that's one of the things he said. You have to have a culture that's willing to fail. That's kind of what this is all about, too, is that you got to take chances.
Right. And this gets harder as you get bigger as well. And you don't need to even be that big. You can be a 150-person, 100-person company, and you figured enough out that you're afraid if you change it up, you'll undermine the thing which
it's
is working
for
you.
It's easy to get entrenched,
And yet, this world moves fast.
Right.
When we talk about preparing for the unpreparable, part of what we're saying is that this world is accelerating, and it's in the change that we're experiencing. And so we don't have enough information. We never have enough information for our plans to be complete. So that's where allowing chance in allows us it forces us to adapt.
Get luck on your side. So we covered a couple of the eight. We got motion, we've got divergence.
We have motion, divergence, commitment.
Commitment.
Uh-huh.
Which is that commitment to go into the boardroom and say, hey, we're going to do it and keep
preparation.
It focused.
Preparation is, chance favors the prepared mind.
That's what Thomas Jefferson said, right? He said
that was Louis Pasteur.
Louis Pasteur, right, yeah.
They're both French.
But Thomas, I'm really bad with this stuff.
No, you're great.
I'm halfway there.
Thomas Jefferson said, I believe in luck, and the harder I work, the more of it I see.
There you go. That's it. We are talking with Thor Muller. His book is Get Lucky. This book will make you $1 billion. How about that? See? That's how you sell a book.
It won't earn you $1 billion, but it'll turn you into
It'll make you a $1 billion baby.
It will definitely make your business luckier.
There you go. Now, that's good.
I'll take that,
And a lot of people agree, including Tony Hsieh and Tim O'Reilly, and we'll talk more in just a bit. But right now, I want to talk about how we talk. which we just had a VAST conference call. We had a little conference call in the conference room just before this, and we used VASTconference.com to make that call. Why do we use VAST Conference? A couple of reasons. One, it's not VoIP. Now, we do a lot of Skype. We use VoIP all the time. But if you want really good, clear quality, there's nothing that can beat fiber optic lines, high-end teleconferencing equipment. That's what VAST uses. Really good sound quality. Really great management console, too. When you sign up, and by the way, it's free to sign up. There's no commitment. There's no contract. Just go to VASTconference.com. I will tell you how you can make a couple of free calls in just a second. But when you sign up, you'll get two numbers. You'll get a toll number and a toll-free number. And you get to choose which number you give your participants. So you can give your staffers the toll number. That's 2.5 cents per minute for a regular toll call. You can give your client, if you're pitching them, you want to give them the 800 number, right? We'll pay for the call. That's 6 cents per minute. You decide which number for the same conference you give up. It's always the same number. That's your VAST conference number. The management console lets you do things like when I'm on a conference call, I open the conference management interface. I can name each person in the conference. I can record each person separately. I have a great recording of it. It's available at any time. It's just really easy to use. It's very professional. I think you can use the free services, but you want to say professional. We're a pro. We're a real company. VASTconference.com. Now, here's the free. We like to do this. Every one of our I'm really, really pleased. Every one of our advertisers has some sort of free trial, and that shows confidence on their part, right? You don't give people free stuff unless you think they're going to come back and become customers. So here's the deal. You're going to get, well, they say 2 business calls. What it is up to 300 minutes to try out the service. So if you had a conference call of 5 people and it was 30 minutes each, you could have 2 of those. So there you go. So that's kind of what you're getting, 2 calls. Up to 5 people for half an hour, or you could have more people for less time, whatever, however you want to do it. VASTconference.com. It's a free account. You'll get that regular number and the 800 number. VASTconference.com, and make sure you use the offer code, as always, triangulation, so that we get credit for sending you their way. VAST Conference. We just literally, we used it right up to this show. I was on a VAST Conference call, and I really like it. It's very simple, works great, sounds great, and it's a nice little tool for business. We're doing business with Thor Muller, who does our, and I should do an ad for Get Satisfaction. It is a really great way for us to stay in touch with you. We get a lot of feedback, and you're right, it's not just complaints, it's ideas, it's very helpful for us. It's a great way for us to manage it. We have dedicated staffers who check it on a regular basis. I check it all the time, and it's really helpful. It really is a great service, so thank you for creating
it. Thank you.
You know, it's huge. You've been doing it for, it's been a while, right?
Yeah, we started it back in 2007. I almost said 1997.
It feels like it, doesn't it?
That's what it's like to get old.
It feels like last century.
Decades start to run together.
But 2007 was 5 years ago now. Isn't that crazy?
I know. And think about all the stuff that's happened in that 5 years.
Yeah.
Like, there was no iPhone.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
That is crazy.
Facebook was limited to networks.
Yeah, I remember we were still looking at WAP sites.
WAP.
If you wanted a big audience on the phone,
on your Motorola Razr.
That's because everybody had a, or a BlackBerry. Yeah. You know, that was horrible. So
the future is way better.
Thank God. Yeah. Thank God. A lot of the companies that we do business with use Get Satisfaction. I think that's how we actually started using it. I think you know what? I think it was actually our audience that said, "Why aren't you on Get Satisfaction?"
Oh, that's great.
It's become kind of an expectation that you use it. If people want to communicate with me or others, we don't say it that often. It's on our website, getsatisfaction.com/twit. We just launched a new website. It was a very useful place for people to go to tell us, hey, that's not working, this isn't working. It's really fantastic. So thank you. You've done a nice job. Any acquisition rumors floating around you, or you want to keep doing it? When people look, we were having this discussion on This Week in Google earlier. When people hear about this billion-dollar acquisition, Gina Trapani was saying, God, I don't want to create the notion in the startup community that that's what you're there for. You're playing for the big exit. You're doing something 5 years. You're creating something of value. You're building a business.
Yeah, no, it's true. And there's in startup land, there's this kind of joke that you want to sell before you start making money.
Right.
Before there's any proof about whether,
whether you're going to or not.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Build for acquisition.
Right, because then people start to value you based on your revenues. And to justify $1 billion acquisition, you need
it's exactly right.
Hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah. Right.
So anyway, I don't, honestly, don't spend my time thinking about that kind of thing. You know, obviously I spend my time writing books and going around talking about big ideas.
You just hang out, drink a lot of beer. I know. It's easy. Easy
beer.
Good beer, though. Yeah. No, I think every entrepreneur I talk to says that. We're not planning. We don't think that way.
I know, and some of them are telling the truth.
There are people who are planning that.
Yeah, right? No, I think if you're... Look, once you've been in this business for a while, if you're still doing it for that, then you need to get your head examined because... There's too many other ways to make money.
Right.
And
I can't remember who said that, but they're like, look, if you want to do that, you get into porn.
Right.
Because that's guaranteed going to make you money.
Sex, yeah.
Is that still true?
I think it's pretty true. It may not be as true as it used to.
You know, right? I'd like to do some research. We'll find out.
How about a few hours?
Can I get back to you? Yeah.
Just do a search.
I can't say I was ever tempted by that as an idea.
No. I've always been attracted to ideas.
Yeah.
You know, somebody asked me, why did you write a book? It's like, well, I like to explore ideas, and then I like to build stuff with those ideas. And I think that, you know, you can create space for both. I talked to somebody else, and they said, I'm sick of ideas for their own sake. Like, well... Ideas for their own sake can ultimately, lead to interesting, again, serendipitous collisions of these ideas that cause you to make a MakerBot or an Instagram.
Yeah, I guess if you never make the MakerBot and you only sit around navel gazing, that would be out of balance. But
there are certain kinds of people who are born academics.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're thinkers, they're writers. There are other people who are born performers. And the problem we run into is when we try to expect everybody to be all things,
right?
And we all had those teachers that were probably great researchers. They were terrible lecturers, right?
Yeah.
And yet we expect these guys to earn their keep by lecturing and boring their freshman classes stiff.
Yeah.
So I think the world is getting wiser to this, and we're creating more. There's more reimagining what these roles are. Which is
absolutely. That's what we're in the middle of right now.
Yeah.
So it's an exciting time.
Yeah. It is.
We're reinventing that. So... you talk about permeability. What does that mean?
Right. Well, permeability is actually the kinds of things we talk about with Get Satisfaction. It means creating... Well, so the image we paint is that our businesses have historically been like castles, right? We build big walls.
Right.
We keep the drawbridges up unless you get a pass and a security clearance.
Right.
And then you let people in. But the social media has allowed is for us to create... a new image of what a business is, which is much more of a porous membrane where we allow information in and out, people in and out.
I kind of like it better than transparency, because transparency means or implies that everything is visible.
Which is a lie, right?
Which is...
No company can
very transparent, but we're not 100% transparent.
Yeah.
Permeable is a better way to think.
We're not going to give you the passwords to the website. We're not that transparent.
The QuickBooks login, I'm sorry, you'll have to call me at home and ask for that. And I'll give you that number in a moment. But, no, permeable is a much better way. And you do want stuff to come in and out.
Yeah, it's exactly. So the idea is not tear down the walls and leave it open. The idea is create new structures that allow for information to move in and out much more fluidly.
Right, And that's what Get Satisfaction
is. And Get Satisfaction is the classic example of that.
Lastly, I want to talk about attraction.
Ah, my favorite.
Yeah, me too. What is it?
So attraction is how we draw chance events to ourselves, meaningful chance encounters to ourselves.
How do you get lucky?
Well, you get lucky by putting all of these skills into practice. And actually, attraction in some ways is the culmination of these skills. But if I was to distill it down, it's projection. It's projecting of your purpose and of your direction out into the world that allows people to and ideas to come towards you.
I sometimes use the word intention.
Intention's
you express your intention, and the world comes to fulfill it somehow. It's a magical thing.
Yeah, it does. Sometimes the most unlikely scenarios come to you because of not even direct linkages, not that you went on screen and projected to people and someone in your audience saw that.
Oh, no, it's much more indirect.
It's much more like somebody in the audience may have seen it and then had a conversation 3 months later, and it happens.
I knew that, for instance, this company was going to succeed because it kept happening. The serendipity kept happening. People kept walking in and saying, I will solve this problem for you before I even knew it, I had it.
Right.
Things like that.
Right.
And it is that. And it comes from being very clear in your intention and expressing it clearly.
And genuine. I think
genuine. Yeah.
So throughout the book, we try to find scientific reasons why these things are true.
Good, because that seems very airy-fairy to me.
It does, right. and all this stuff, if you're not careful, will feel airy-fairy.
Right.
But all these things have a scientific backing. In the case of this one, there's some great research that was done out of, I believe, University of Florida, where they took people who had a self-reported strong sense of purpose.
Right.
And then they put them in a room, and they had groups of people coming in and seeing banks of people. And then ask the observers, which of these people were you more attracted to? Did you want to spend time talking to? And so forth and so on. And by significant margin, people were drawn to those who had a self-assessed statement of purpose.
Right.
So we send these signals, and it's measurable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 Nonverbal ways we...
I know what I'm about.
Tone of voice.
I think it's the John Hamm effect. That's what I
call
it.
The John Hamm.
So the book is called Get Lucky, How to Plan, How to Put Planned Serendipity to Work for You and Your Business by two guys who know a lot because they created Get Satisfaction, which has been a very big success, Thor Muller and Lane Becker. And it's not out yet. But
next week.
You can order it. If you go to Get Lucky, is it Get Lucky the book?
Yep.
GetLuckyTheBook.com. Is it a coincidence? Get Satisfaction, Get Lucky?
You know, we didn't set out to do that. We came up with the concept of planned serendipity, and then it was one hop for getting lucky, and then it was Get Lucky, and
Get Lucky.
Here we are.
Prepared for the
you attracted the name.
We did. Yeah. Apparently.
Yeah, and you can find out more just by going to the website, GetLuckyTheBook.com. And again, please thank Lane, because you guys have really made our lives a lot easier. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Thor Muller. Thank you for joining us. We do this show every Wednesday, 5 p.m. Pacific, or 4 p.m. 4 p.m.
Yep, 4 p.m.
You know, that's why I'm always late. I thought it was 5. 4 p.m. Pacific.
You're an hour early.
7 p.m. Eastern. And that would be 2300 UTC, if my math is correct, and you can watch it live. We like it live because we watch you in the chat room watching us, and it's kind of a weird, exciting thrill for us. But you can also get it after the fact. We have audio and video versions available everywhere. Finer podcasts are aggregated. Aggregate the unaggregatable.
Oh, please.
Yeah.
Say that.
Yeah. And iTunes would be like an example, okay? Or just go to twit.tv. Thank you so much for being here, and we'll see you next time. Thank you, Thor.
Thanks.
On Triangulation.